Welcome everyone to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's Monthly Leadership Forum. Today we are excited to have Dr. Martin Lanek. Martin is the author of the best-selling business book, The Leader Habit, and the CEO of Pinsight. His habit-forming career development solutions focus on five-minute practice sessions woven throughout the day. Martin's research-based formula has helped thousands of high potentials, managers, directors, and executives in 30 countries achieve the results that they want. More than 100 companies, including IAG and CenturyLink, have implemented his programs, which received awards from Chief Learning Officer and Brandon Hall. Martin's work has been featured in Forbes, Fast Company, Chief Learning Officer, Talent Economy, and Monster.com. He regularly appears on radio shows and podcasts, including Secrets of Success, The Business Creators Radio Show, Business Insanity Talk Radio, Work That Matters, Business Leadership Podcast, and Small Business Advocate. Martin has contributed articles to outlets like Chief Executive, Business Management Daily, HR People and Strategy, and HR.com. As we were just talking about, Martin lives in Denver, Colorado. He's there today, which is great. And he also holds a PhD in Industrial and Organizational Psychology from Colorado State University. You can find him on Twitter at Martin Lanek. That's Martin and Lanek is L-A-N-I-K. And his website is theleaderhabit.com. But first, I want to welcome you to the show. I really appreciate you being with us.
Thank you, Sue. It's my pleasure to be here.
Yeah, thank you again. So as I often do, Martin, with all my guests, and this is our, 14th year of doing this every month, so I always ask about your journey. So I gave the bio, but I want to know, in terms of your own personal rendition of it and your own personal journey, career path, how you got to writing this book. What did you do? What did you take? What road did you take to get to write this book?
Yes, that's a very good question. Well, I can tell you, I remember about 4 years ago, I had this moment of really existential crisis, I call it. I came across an article in the Journal of Consulting Psychology that basically compared annual investment of American corporations in leadership development together with people's confidence in leadership. And like yourself, I've spent at least a decade helping organizations build and run leadership development programs. And I found that there is actually a negative correlation. It made me question whether my work was making a difference. And that was the impetus of starting this research study, starting on this journey. They took us to every continent. I joke that every continent except Antarctica, we couldn't find any leaders in Antarctica.
Awesome.
But, just a lot of snow and ice.
That's okay.
But it was this moment when you dedicate your career into something you believe in, and then you find that the research is actually suggesting that you're not making a difference. It makes you wonder, is all my work wasted, or is there a way to make leadership development more effective, and what does that really look like?
Awesome. So you decided to, you obviously have a consulting business, and then at what point sort of in the consulting business did you decide to write this book to formalize, I guess, some of the habits that you teach?
Yeah, so we spent about 4 years studying managers and executives around the world. So it took us about 4 years, we put them through a very intense simulation so that we could see, we were not just surveying these leaders, we were actually observing them in action. And
Oh, nice.
We put every single one through a standardized set of tasks so we could test their leadership skills. And then we recorded every single move that they took in the simulation, and that allowed us to look at their behaviors under a microscope, so to speak. So we could isolate the tiny micro behaviors that make some leaders effective and others less effective.
Well, that sounds really interesting. I want to hear more about that study. So what did you actually do to notice the microbehaviors? Like, what was the simulation?
So we designed this 3-hour simulation where you can think of it, I think of it as a Harvard business case study come to life. So we place people in this fictitious company for 3 hours, and then we role-played with them different challenges. So they played like an EVP in this $2 billion global company. The company was on the verge of bankruptcy. They were brought in to save this company, and they had to create a vision and strategy presentation for their board. They had to coach one of their direct reports who was on his way out, and this was actually a live human being, an actor that we trained to act in a standardized way. So we could see how each one of these 800 leaders would approach that one specific situation. Then we had them deal with an angry business partner to see how they would approach that situation. So that just gives you a flavor of the complexity of the simulation and the realness of it. So it was very real life. Our participants reported that about 10 minutes into it, they lost sense of reality. This became their job.
Right.
And that gave us, you know, imagine just having 800 executives going, playing the exact same role and going through the exact same set of tasks in the same order. It gives you a great deal of standardization. So now you can be very specific in parsing out, yes, this was an effective move. No, this didn't work here. And then you have a great amount of data that you could analyze and really find what is it that makes an executive effective and what doesn't.
Well, I'm just like, yeah, so impressed with the research itself. I mean, how did you decide like things like 3 hours, little things like that? How did you decide on 3 hours? How did you decide 800 people? And how did you design? Kind of about the design of it. So talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into obviously the results.
Yeah, sure. So we experimented with different during piloting. We experimented with different notions. One of the key criteria for us was that we had to be able to do this online virtually because we couldn't travel and couldn't ask executives to fly all around the world to an assessment center. So we designed a virtual assessment center, then we, in the piloting phase, we experimented with different formats. Turns out that in the online setting, the 3 hours was just around the sweet spot, so that's what we ended up going with. And then as far as the sample size, so of course you try to collect as much data as you possibly can. Getting on executives' calendars and asking them to give you 3 hours is close to impossible, as anyone on the call will know. So we were very glad that we ended up with a sample size of about 800, and it took us about 4 years to collect data from the sample.
Did you do this through Colorado State? I mean, did you do this through, who sponsored this, essentially?
So our company, Pinsight, actually sponsored this research.
Wow. How cool. It sounds really cool. So one of the conclusions, obviously, as I'm looking at your book right now, just to remind everybody, The Leader Habit, obviously you can get it on Amazon and other places, but I'm looking at it, and so you just sort of divide the book into, you know, how it works, how leadership habit works, building your leadership skills and exercises that develop your skills. And interestingly, you have, I kind of want to go backwards here because I want to talk about like the actual ways you divided the leadership in general. So I want to kind of go big picture here. You've got getting things done as one section, that's chapter six, and then you've got focusing on people. And within those, you have planning and execution, solving problems and making decisions, leading change. And other people, you have persuasion and influence, growing people and teams, interpersonal skills. So these are pretty basic. You know, I mean, I think a lot of books will go through these, but how did you decide, I assume based on the research, you narrowed it down to these, I guess you want to call it six areas.
That's absolutely correct. So we, you can imagine, so we collected data on, I don't even know how many hundreds different microbehaviors that we were able to observe. And then through statistical analyses, we started to eliminate the ones that, for instance, did not differentiate between effective leaders and not effective leaders, then the ones where they did not fall into any of these categories. And we had a preset criteria that we used, and based on that, we started eliminating the ones that did not fit these minimum criteria, and then we ended up with a list of 79 microbehaviors that grouped under these headings that you just mentioned. So 22 different leadership skills and then 79 different microbehaviors.
Wow. And you did this through statistical analysis. Okay, so explain what that means. Like somebody was rating, obviously. There's obviously some rating. This is not AI. So
yeah.
Somebody had to be rating. A person had to be rating a person, and that got put into the stats. And then obviously you could use AI, the algorithm after that. But tell us a little bit about that. Who is doing the rating?
So imagine, you have data, or you have videos of role plays.
Sure.
You have data on like email responses or project plans, presentations that these participants created. And then we had three independent raters, usually organizational psychologists, that were coding and rating these behaviors. So each participant was rated by three independent raters to increase objectivity.
Interesting.
And that was then actually analyzed.
Okay. Wow, what an undertaking. I mean, really, that's amazing. The last time I heard some research like this was we got Teresa Amabilia on the call talking about her Small Wins article and how they did 12,000 entries of people's reflections. You know, similar kind of thing. It's a lot of data. So really impressive. So it's a good job on that. So let's talk about the results of this. Well, before we get to that, I want to go back to what you said at the beginning, how you were inspired to do this research and to get into this work because there's so much data that shows that it's actually an inversion of leadership development programs and leadership skill development. So tell us a little bit about that. Like, why do you think that this is happening? Like, why do you think that these leadership development programs, and that could be, I would assume, anything. It could be training, coaching, online, any of that. They're not working. What's your theory on that, or what's your theory from the stats?
What's the thinking? Yes.
Yeah.
The idea and the reason why we actually set out on this journey and invested all these resources into this research study is that we wanted to find a different way how to change people's behavior. When you think of leadership, it is essentially defined as a set of behaviors. We know that there are certain skills that effective leaders have, and those are the skills that distinguish effective leaders from not effective leaders. I think where we failed and what my research shows is how we go about teaching leadership skills. Majority of the leadership development programs today are focused on knowledge acquisition. So
they're focused on what?
On knowledge acquisition.
Yes.
So think of the traditional leadership development program. So you might have some classes, maybe e-learning modules, and all of it is really just focused on giving information to people. But it's not effective in changing their behavior. But at the end of the day, that's what we care about, right? That we care about the behavioral change. So I start looking at different areas of training and different areas in cognitive psychology, especially around habit formation, and start thinking of leadership as being really a set of habits. Because our habits, we don't forget, we don't have to think about. These are just behaviors that we do them naturally. We do them automatically. It's our second nature. So then I start thinking about, what's the most effective way to take leadership skills and help people to internalize them and turn them into automatic responses to cues so they don't have to focus on it, they don't have to spend much energy on it, it just happens naturally.
Brushing teeth. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the idea. And then as we were reviewing this literature in habit formation, we discovered that The smaller you keep the behavior, the quicker it becomes a habit. So
smaller,
that's why we start.
Yeah, smaller. Okay.
Yeah. So, and that's why we start focusing on the micro behaviors, and that's why we set out on this research study to identify the tiniest micro behaviors we could, so that we would make it much easier for people to practice these behaviors on their job on a daily basis, and through the practice and repetition, they actually can internalize them and turn them into habits.
Wow, that's great. Okay, so makes a lot of sense. Let's get into the specific. I'm not going to go through all, how many, 72? What did you tell me?
79, yes.
79, okay.
That would take us like
but,
2 weeks.
Well, and you're using the word microbehavior, so I'm wondering, do you have an NLP background at all, or in your...
No, I don't. I'm a psychologist, industrial psychologist by training.
I know you have that. I'm just wondering if there's any NLP, because the word microbehavior is actually, use a lot by them. But anyway, talk with us about this idea of leader habit formula and, why is it distinct? It sounds like part of the distinction is that you're getting into a small bit as you can, and maybe give us an example.
Sure. So the leader habit formula is essentially a different approach to leadership development. So rather than going through classes and going through e-learning modules, the idea is that you pick one exercise and then you practice it once a day for 5 minutes, and that's all you do. And through this one exercise that you focus on, you are building one portion of a skill. So example, we found that when, for instance, delegation, one of the micro behaviors for effective delegation is specifying what is it that needs to be done but letting the employee figure out how to do that. Otherwise, we would call that micromanagement, right? If you precisely tell the employees how to go about doing their job. So an exercise that we built, so we found this as one of the micro behaviors through our research that really differentiates effective leaders from not effective leaders. And now we can build a 5-minute exercise around that. So after deciding to delegate a project to a particular person, you would assign it by saying, I'd like you to figure out how to do X. And then pose a question, how do you think you'll do that? So, and this is all you do. So it's a very simple exercise. It only takes 5 minutes a day. It consists of a cue, so it tells you precisely when to do that micro behavior. It's very prescriptive in terms of what you do or say. And then you practice it for 5 minutes, and that research shows that it takes about 66 days to form this habit. So you would practice it 66 days, yes. So about 2 months. So you would practice this one thing for 66 days, and at the end of the journey, 66 days later, you'll notice that you're doing this behavior automatically now. You don't even have to think about it, and you've just moved the needle a little bit and became better at delegating. So that's the leader habit formula.
So when you you're talking about that sounds fascinating that we know it's like 66 days, but when you say they're going to practice it, are they actually going and practicing it like in a real situation?
That's exactly the point.
Yeah, so when they're delegating, they have to go out and actually do the delegation.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So every day, whenever you ask your colleagues to do something, whenever you're wanting to delegate, you would delegate it using these words.
Okay, and how many habits do you suggest that people work on at one time?
Just one.
Okay.
That's the whole point, right? We want to make it easy. You want to make it something that is sustainable over long term, and we don't want to confuse people. So just picking one behavior, sticking with it for the next 2 months, is actually the key to success.
Right, and I'm thinking also if somebody is, for example, working with a coach or is working on two or three things at a time. That's slow going, so I'm wondering how, or even if they're reading the book and working on their own, do you find that people are getting frustrated at all with just doing one thing at a time, or do you find that there are some people who could do three at a time, or what?
Well, I encourage people just to stick with one, and just go with that one, and here's why. So our research shows that this one behavior can actually become a keystone habit. And this is a concept that has been popularized in the Power of Habit book. I'm sure you and others on the call might be familiar with it. And it's very well supported in research. So what happens is, yes, you are for 2 months, you're just focused on this one behavior. But because a lot of these leadership behaviors are related, you may be inadvertently practicing a whole set of other skills that you are not consciously aware of. So what I find oftentimes is that by the time a person is done with the first exercise 2 months later, they have not only developed that one skill that they've been practicing, but they developed a whole set of related skills around it as well.
I see. Okay. All right. So let's, before we break for, not break, but let people talk and ask questions, I want to see you to give us an example. You use a delegation one. One thing you could maybe start with one that that is the most common, like the one that people want to use the most, if you will, or the first couple. Which one would you suggest people start, or even start with? Let's go through a few of those.
Yeah, so there are several tools. So, of course, there are individual differences. So every one of us has some strengths and some development needs. And there are, in the Leader Habit book, there are a whole set of self-assessments that can guide you to identify what is the one skill where you can actually start. Mm-hmm. I'll give you an example of a habit that is related to innovation. That seems to be one of the topics that touches most organizations today. There's that focus on innovation. So what is it actually, what's a habit that you can do and anybody on the call can do to improve their ability to innovate? So we found that one of the micro behaviors that distinguished, again, effective leaders from not effective leaders when it came to innovation was combining seemingly unrelated ideas. For example, when people who are good at innovating, when they look at a problem, they see the connection where other people don't see the connection. Mm-hmm. So how can you actually train yourself to do this? And the exercise that I write in the book is after you or someone else uses the word but when describing two opposite ideas, ask yourself, how are these two things connected? And then write down the answer. So, for example, you might say that most customers love our products, but there are some who actually hate it. So now we're using the word but. We're combining two seemingly unrelated ideas. So I could ask myself, well, what's the connection here? And that's the habit. So I'm tuning myself into the word but, looking for the two unrelated ideas, and then training my brain to look at connection between those. And it could be that the connection is all these customers actually have strong emotional reactions to the product. So it's a very simple exercise, but through repetition, 2 months later, I would be doing this automatically. And you can only imagine the power of that, how I'm changing the way I think and changing the way I'm approaching problems and getting better at innovating.
Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, and we talk about that combination skills all the time. And, you know, so the way I'll do it is, like, I'll take people to museums and I'll have them look at things that don't look related and then have them, you know, I do it sort of in a whole different way, but this is so much simpler because you're just doing it in everyday. You're trying to get people to think about the very things people do every day, which is they say that all the time. They'll say one thing and then negate it with but or yet or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So what that will do is just train someone to actually start thinking about it, even though the particular example, you know, has nothing to do with potentially a positive connection, but it still gets people trained to be thinking about it. So that's great. That's a great example. Do you have another example you can share?
Sure. So I can give you an example. We talked about delegation, so I might give you another very simple example for delegation. So we found that, again, a micro behavior that effective delegators use is confirming interest when they delegate, which sounds so simple, but I am astonished by how few leaders actually do this, including myself. So the exercise would be after describing a project you wish to delegate, gauge the person's level of interest and ask them, is this something you'd like to do? Are you interested in this? Super simple, but what it will do is gets you thinking around assigning projects to people who would be actually excited and motivated to do them, rather than just assigning projects to people and going through the motions and then ending up with unmotivated individuals who don't want to do the projects you assign to them.
Okay, that sounds great. Gail, I want to open it up right now. And if you have a question or a comment for Martin, just state your name first, and then obviously state your question or comment. Who has a question?
Hi, my name is Malcolm. I'm calling in San Francisco, head of marketing at an e-commerce. Yeah, hello. Head of marketing at an e-commerce company. And one of the things that that we kind of stumbled on is that a lot of engineers will pair program. Like they'll sit next to each other and work on one problem, and productivity is actually paradoxically higher than those two people doing something separately. Have you seen this principle applied like elsewhere? I mean, another classic example is like a tennis coach, like working with their athlete and like watching them swing and giving them instant feedback. So like a radical approach to work could be like having an accountability partner, or a partner just like there by your side, literally at your desk, working on that blog post with you or that marketing campaign, as opposed to going off and doing it on your own and then being really likely to be distracted and not focused as much as if someone was there next to you.
Right. Any thoughts? Question. Martin's going to answer, then I'm going to answer it too. Go ahead, Martin.
So, of course, and thank you for the question. So, of course, anytime you can increase accountability through either direct supervisor of the individual or any thinking partners or mentors, coaches, it's going to increase the chances. Feedback is always great, very positive. So I see this this type of methodology applied across sports, across training in various different fields. Because we know that it does work. One of the things that we found very effective is an application, a phone app that we released earlier this year that actually feeds these daily exercises to you, allows you to track your progress, but then also works very much like Fitbit. So when you do the exercise, it calculates how much you have actually improved on that particular skill. And if this information is then shared with your coach or with your direct supervisor, you can just imagine to what extent it can increase accountability and help the person stay on track. But the bottom line is, and that's where I think a lot of learning and development individuals on the call, professionals, would agree with me, is as a field we're moving towards the notion that it's the individual, him or herself, that needs to own their development. Because behavior change can only happen if the person wants to change. If they don't, no matter how much accountability or pressure you apply, the person is just going to resist and they're not going to change it. So that would be my response.
Malcolm, you have a response to that, and before I chime in here?
No, I think that's really helpful. No, all ears.
So
any further thoughts?
Yeah, so your question is, I mean, I know we're recording this, which is great, because I just want to, like, use this question over and over and over, because we get this in effect. I have a background in sports, so I'll often use tennis, you know, individual sports mostly, but tennis and, you know, even weight training, whatever. It's like as a metaphor for the importance of feedback. And when I'm talking with managers, and I basically say, like, we have to give constant feedback. It's like you wouldn't think anything of a ski instructor giving you, like, brutal feedback even, you know, or a weight trainer, like, getting on your case. And I'm not advocating that we be brutal or harsh, but the point is that we, in certain situations, will take feedback willingly. And then when we get to corporations, it's like, well, we're performing in the same way an athlete does, but yet we're not as willing to take feedback. Not everybody, but some people are. And even worse, the managers are not willing to give it. And so your analogy around you know, having a partner next to you or having a boss or a peer, so we actually use peer coaching a lot for this very reason. And also we encourage bosses to give feedback constantly. So the way to scale a corporation, either scaling or a high performance team, either one or both, is that the only way I know how to do it is to do constant feedback. So you're totally on the right track. What I'm loving about today is that, you know, we've got these tools that we didn't used to have. So you don't have to have a person giving you feedback. So you don't have to have that mirror. You can just do it yourself with an app. But if you have both, it's even better. So what's the app called, Martin?
It's called the Leader Habit app. Very easy to remember,
easy.
Just like the name of the
easy.
Book. Yes,
right.
Leader
right.
Habit.
Perfect.
Yes.
So we all suggest we go out and get that. But great question, Malcolm. Thank you. Because it really gets to the heart of this, that you need feedback from an app or from a person or both, for sure.
Well, ideally both. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. We have to be careful that this is not all about, you know, my son is 12 and he's like, I want this app to help me with my goals. I'm like, okay, honey, whatever it takes, right, here, have the app, which I thought was cute and wonderful. But it's not just about the app. He's got to get feedback from his parents and from his teachers as well, human feedback. So we can't use AI for all of this. Okay. So I want to spend a little bit more time on some of these microbehaviors, and specifically, how do you suggest that people figure out, like, I want to talk about assessment a little bit, because, you know, there's 79 behaviors, you're doing one at a time for 2 months, so how long would that take you to get through all those? A long time.
14 years.
14 years, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so how are you suggesting that people assess the, you know, six they're going to do this year?
Yeah, well, I can tell you our approach, I'll give you two approaches. So with our corporate clients, and we also have a whole arm of our business that is for individuals, and that's you can find more information at leaderhabit.com. So we use these simulation assessment. So the same type of assessment that we used in the research study, we also use to help people determine which habits they already have and what they need to work on. So we had the criteria of the 79 different microbehaviors that we're watching. We'll place you for 3 hours in a fictitious company. We'll watch you work. We'll role play with you. And then based on these observations, we will determine what are the gaps and what are you already
Great.
Good at, and then it just makes the development planning very easy. So that's the I would say I used the word, you know, Cadillac version. Let's call it the Tesla version. We need to update our metaphors here a little bit.
That is the Tesla version.
You actually go through this.
Yeah, because that's not cheap.
Yes, it's you know, it is not as expensive as people might think, but it is still not a $10 assessment. So the other option is we have several complimentary free assessments that come with the book, and they help you identify at least the key areas. So, you know, should you focus on the people skills or the task skills? And then you can look through those. We have also identified the leadership skills that are most likely to become keystone habits. If you have no idea where to start, pick one of those because you are going to have most success. At the same time, so on the leaderhabit.com website, we have three personality tests that you can take. And as part of the results, so not only you get insights into your personality, but it'll flag what are the most natural leadership skills that you will find intrinsically rewarding and you'll find easy to practice, and what are the ones that are least natural to you that you should probably stay away from practicing for the time being until you build some momentum, and then you can start looking at the more challenging ones. So those are some different tools that people can use as they try and identify the right workout. Now, you have background in sports, so I often use this analogy of the book, and what's most exciting to me in this book is the catalog of those daily exercises. So it's very much like having a catalog of biceps, triceps, lats, you know, core type of exercises. That was exactly my vision for this book. I wanted to have a catalog of exercises that are tied to different leadership skills. So if you know that you need to work on your coaching and mentoring or ability to influence others or managing priorities, here are 5 minutes a day exercises that are proven to work. There's science behind them, and you can just simply pick one up and run with it.
Wow, that's great. Let's take, we have some more time now, so we've got about 10 minutes. So let's take some of those. Because we've talked about the assessment, we've talked about the 79 microbehaviors. Are there, I guess what we want to know is, can you explain the difference to people between the 22 core skills and the 79 microbehaviors? Maybe do that. I think that would be, and then you have the exercises.
Sure.
I think we want to make sure we're clear on all that.
Yes. So the microbehaviors are the small, tiny behaviors that make up the skills. So you think of a skill like empowering others, right? Very important for leadership, of course. So that would consist of three different microbehaviors, or four actually. So four different microbehaviors that we have identified. And then you have an exercise that targets each one of these microbehaviors. I can give you an example of one of the microbehaviors. So we know that empowering others means that you don't solve the problems for them, but you act as a thinking partner and you help them solve their own problems on their own. So an exercise that you can practice on a daily basis is after somebody comes to you with a problem or issue, ask them questions instead of offering solutions and advice by saying, what makes this the problem? What have you already tried? So very simple exercise, and you just train yourself to ask this question every time an employee or a friend or a family member comes to you with a problem. You start training yourself to act as their thinking partner rather than solving their problems for them.
So the one you've explained, the examples you've been giving have throughout our time together have been essentially practices, and those actual practices are the exercises, and those are the microbehaviors. I just want to make sure we're clear on what's what here.
Yes, exactly. Okay. Yes. So the exercises I've been giving you, those are the microbehaviors. The exercises are the microbehaviors.
Perfect. So then, and then you've got it divided into, again, if you guys want to look at the book, but I mean, I just ordered copies for all my team, actually, as we've been talking.
Thank you.
So anyway, seriously, I mean, this is like, I just love the way you've done the research, I think, and also that you put folks through that same simulation. But I also want to get clear that there's two main areas, the tasks and the people skills, and then there's 22 core behaviors within six areas within those, and then there's the 79 microbehaviors, and the exercises are the microbehaviors. So I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Yes, you got it.
And then when you're working with corporations now and you have them go through the assessment, the simulation, how many people do you typically need to have to make that work? You can't just have one person go through that, obviously.
We can have just one person go through it because we have data from thousands and thousands of leaders already that have gone through these assessments. But generally, organizations use this as part of a program. So they might use this as part of a high potential program or as part of their succession planning strategy. We might have, one of our clients here in Colorado has used this for their CEO succession. We have a large Wall Street client that has used this as an assessment of the leadership capabilities of the top 100 executives around the world. So those are just some use cases. And then we have clients that are, using this with thousands of leaders across the board, where they are trying to in understand first what their leadership gaps are, and then are adopting the strategy and using the technology to help them move the needle. And they're able to monitor now on a daily basis which of those leaders is actually practicing, is not practicing, and they have access to real-time data.
So you have the actors in the simulation. You literally could put one through it, but I mean, obviously that's going to cost a heck of a lot more. So you probably want to get a group of folks. Do you do any, when you do assessment like that, do you do any 360 work at all? Or you just,
no, we don't. Yes, we don't use 360. So the way to understand the difference between 360s and a simulation assessment like this is that what 360 is picking up on is largely the reputation of the individual in the organization. And then you have all these politics, of who people choose as their raters and who they like, who they dislike, and all of this. So in our case, it is completely, it removes that bias completely out of the equation, and you have a standardized process so that every one of your leaders is going through exactly the same process in exactly the same order. And that level of standardization then allows you to have much more objective data. But I think what the most exciting part about a simulation assessment is that we can compare your leaders to our global benchmarks. So you know how your leadership group stacks up against thousands and thousands of leaders that have completed this assessment. So you have much more of a global perspective.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. That's great. So so let's go over a couple of microbehaviors, and then we'll just wrap up. Just give us a few more examples.
Okay, great. So some that probably apply to everybody. I'm trying to find the ones that all of us can practice. And one of that is, of course, active listening. So who couldn't get better at active listening? So one of the microbehaviors is, of course, asking open-ended questions. And the exercise to train yourself to do that in just minutes a day would be, after realizing that you want to ask a question, start it with the words what or how. And practice this for 66 days, and that is how you're going to improve your ability to ask open-ended rather than closed-ended questions.
What feedback are you getting on, and in terms of the sustainability and the the stick-to-itiveness of people sticking with it for 66 days or 2 months, whatever? Like what resistance are you getting at all?
Well, I can tell you that there are people with these behaviors, because these behaviors are so tiny and so small, they become automatic within a few weeks. So most often the feedback we get is after somebody practices this for a couple weeks, they got the hang of it, and then they're amazed that they are automatically doing this behavior, and then realize later, oh, I just did that. I didn't even realize that I was doing it. So of course, there's a group of people that are not going to do this, and no matter how simple or how rewarding this might be, they're just not motivated or ready to change. When we did research with the adoption of the app, the Leader Habit app in organizations, we found that there's about 80% adoption rate in 3 months.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Okay.
Well, thanks again, Martin. I just really am pleased with what you're doing, and want to spread the good word here. And I guess a lovely research. I love how you've been able to apply it, and it really falls in line with a lot of what we're trying to do and a lot of people on the call. So we will continue to spread the good word about it. And, again, I want to tell everybody you can get to Martin at Martin Lanik, L-A-N-I-K, and the Leader Habit is the .com is the website. And is that the best way to get a hold of you, Martin, through your Twitter, or is there an email that's better, or?
So Twitter, LinkedIn works, and my email address is martin.lanik, L-A-N-I-K, @pinsight.com. And there's also a link if you go to the leaderhabit.com website. you'll be able to get in touch with us if you'd like, if you have any questions or if you'd just like to chat about some of these concepts.
Perfect. And it's Kinsight. Just want to make sure everybody got that.
Yes.
Kinsight. Great. So again, thanks so much for your wisdom and research. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Sue. This was fun.
Yeah. And I want to just let everybody know we're really thrilled to have David Bradford from Stanford, sort of a long-standing professor there. We're really thrilled we can get him. He's going to be with us on Wednesday, October 24th at 1 p.m. Pacific. His latest book is Influence Without Authority. I've heard him speak. He's really funny. And I'm really happy that we're able to get him. So I want to encourage people to join us. And that will be our pre-Halloween discussion. So Halloween is our favorite time of the year around here. So everybody, have a wonderful month. And we'll see you on October 24th. Thanks again. Bye now.